This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Right, about an hour from now, we will be talking with Heidi Watney, who is with Apple TV. Apple TV Plus carrying the Astros game tonight against the Mets at Minute Maid. 7 o'clock start. She's a sideline reporter for the broadcast tonight. She joined us last year. She's great. She's a lot of fun. So we'll talk with her about the Astros, about Apple TV, what changes or advancements have they made in their coverage. The streaming thing with sports is getting to be a really, really big deal. So we'll talk about that with Heidi Watney in about an hour from now. But right now, we've played this game the last 2 days, and it's gotten tremendous feedback from all of you who have texted in on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, that you really enjoy playing along with us in your cars or at your desk, wherever you may be. And this game is the founder of this game is Pope Zaza, Seth Payne. We use the anonymous quotes from scouts, from Bob McGinn, who has made a really nice cottage industry of collecting these quotes from anonymous scouts. He's a writer from up in Wisconsin who, if you've been listening in the last few days, we've used a lot of his stuff. It's really good stuff this time of year. Seth reads anonymous scouting quotes on current or former Texans draftees, and then I have to guess which one he is talking about.
Yeah, and I, you know what, I'm this morning, you know what, maybe we'll find, okay, there's one specific player I've been looking for, but the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where Bob McGinn used to write for, and he did a lot of this stuff. They must have had budget cuts or anything, because they don't have archives on a lot of things.
They can't afford disk space.
It'll show up in the search. I really wanted J.J. Watts because he's in Wisconsin.
I'm up there.
I can find it at some point. At some point, we'll do this later, maybe next year, and we'll get a J.J. Watt one.
Yep.
And I'll sprinkle it in there.
All right.
It's getting tougher because now, by process of elimination, and with your vast powers of deductive reasoning, you can eliminate people from the pool.
Yes.
So it's going to be a lot harder for our listeners who haven't heard all these segments because they don't know which ones we've done already.
That's fair.
So give yourself a little bit of a leeway, those of you who are playing at home.
I'll give them leeway, and I will not do the thing that I would be just to show off. I almost did yesterday with one of the players where I just jump in while you're talking. Like the very first thing you said, I knew who it was. I'll let it marinate and play out and let people play along, you know?
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. All right. This is a Texans draft pick.
Yep.
Who played offensive line. Maybe the highest ceiling of all the offensive linemen, said one scout. Arguably, This one's tricky. Oh, boy. I just really... Okay, I'm going to make this really...
This is the easy
really,
one. Really this hard. Is the first one.
This is somebody that we've already had, I'm just realizing
okay.
now. So maybe the highest ceiling of all the offensive linemen, can play both tackles, and I could see him playing guard. He's a good athlete, has nice feet. I'd really like to work with him, but I don't understand why he was playing right tackle and not left tackle.
Okay, this has to be Blake Fisher, right?
No, it's Titus Howard.
It's Titus Howard? Okay.
Yes. Yep.
Got it wrong, and we've had it already.
No. I put it in there because the first time I screwed it up and included that he was a small school prospect.
Oh,
so that was the one that, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I don't know if we've done Fisher yet or not. That I just went immediately.
I think we did do Fisher, but yeah. Okay, so now let's open it up to everybody then because okay. I can't even remember who we've done and who we haven't.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. This one, boy, I had to omit a couple.
I'm 0 for 1 on one that I've done already. That's terrible.
I had to omit some really obvious ones with this next one.
Okay.
This is a Texans draft pick at wide receiver. Sometime in the last 10 years.
Down, and I've got the list of draftees in front of me. For those who don't, you know, those who are listening on the radio, that is the one thing. Seth has allowed me to at least have the list of players they've drafted at these positions. Go ahead.
All right. He's an inside, outside, X or Z slot, X or Z or slot. He can do it all.
That's it?
Did interviews at the combine. Okay. Expects to be cleared medically.
Okay.
He's a possession receiver, but he's quick.
Yeah.
Runs good routes.
Yep.
Doesn't have top speed or explosion. We won't find out his speed now. More of a chain mover.
You don't need to say anything else. Once you said there was an injury, that was the giveaway. But I was going to guess this guy anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that is John Metchie III.
That is Jonathan Metchie III.
John Metchie III. Yes. Now, when you at first, the very first part of that description, I was wavering between John Metchie and Tank Dell. When you're talking about he can play multiple positions.
Yeah.
And,
He didn't even do, Tank Dell a couple years ago. He wasn't on his list of top receivers. The disrespect.
The very disrespect.
The disrespect they show our wide receivers.
Yeah.
I won't stand for it.
Yeah.
The one that I did, the stuff I didn't include from John Metchie.
Yeah, yeah.
Born in Taiwan, grew up in Africa, and now living in Canada.
Yeah, that's good editing by you right there.
Yeah, that might have been a little too narrow.
Yeah, yep.
The other parts of that, good football player, I don't know how you can take him that high.
Mm-hmm.
And in parentheses, it says the first round. So, I don't... Was John Metchie projected as a guy that might go at the back end of the first round?
Maybe before the ACL. I mean, he ended up getting taken 44th overall, which he's not played to that level. I think he's going to be around the NFL for a while. But he's not played to the level of the 44th overall pick. Maybe he will this year. It's already his contract year. That's how fast that's flown by.
It is.
Yeah.
Man.
All right. Who's next? Who you got? I'm one for two so far. How are y'all doing in your cars right now? Text in.
Let's go here. I had to delete a couple guys because I realized we just... Okay, here we go.
Okay.
This is a Texans defensive back taken sometime in the last couple years.
Okay.
Is he a true safety or a true corner?
Hmm.
There will be a division there. He has the most talent of maybe anybody in this thing.
Wow.
I'll roll the dice and say he'll be a solid starter. I really like him. He's a high-risk, high-reward player.
Okay. All right. Now, that you said it was recent.
Within the last 10 years.
Within the last 10 years. Okay, when you said recent, I immediately thought Kalen Bullock, but I'm going to say... This is Lonnie Johnson Jr. that you're talking about.
No, it wasn't, but that was a good guess.
Yeah.
That's a good guess. It was Kalen Bullock.
It was Kalen Bullock. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The part about him not playing safety or true corner was probably... Lonnie Johnson, the Texans thought he was a true corner.
Yeah.
For annoyingly long.
Yes.
Remember?
And now he's a safety.
Lonnie Johnson. Yeah,
yes.
And now he's a safety.
Yep.
And he's built like a safety. He's just a huge guy.
I got that one wrong, but I don't feel bad about it.
Other things about Kalen Bullock, I really like him. He's a high-risk, high-reward player. He's got to clean up some of the tackling, but he's a really good athlete and has unique ball skills.
That's spot on.
Somebody else said, we think he's a third-round corner. He's not strong, really inconsistent as a tackler. He makes some business decisions as a tackler. We haven't seen that out of him at all.
No.
He
needs to improve.
Reckless. Yeah, he needs to improve, but I think he's pretty reckless, if anything, when he goes in there. I don't think he's making business decisions.
When we sit here and talk about guys, I think it's an easy filter with this team. Like, is the guy swarmy or not swarmy?
Yeah.
There's never been one point during the season where we've thought, boy, Kalen Bullock, I don't know. I mean, he needs to be a little swarmy. Or, like, if anything, he's a little overzealous sometimes.
I forgot this about him.
Yeah.
His 8 reps on the bench were the fewest by any safety.
Okay.
That's a low number of reps.
It is.
For 225, yeah. His skinny legs are the most noticeable thing about him.
Yeah.
But this person goes on to say he's very thin, which doesn't bode well. He's a middle field. He's a middle of the field safety. Doesn't see route combinations real fast, which means he's in the trouble zone. Gets out of position too easy. We very much saw that and early in the season. I think it's one of the things he improved on a lot by the end of the season.
I think the top three guys the Texans took in that draft last year, Lassiter at 42, Fisher at 59, I think it was, and then Kalen Bullock in the third round. I think if you redrafted that draft, I think Lassiter's a first rounder. I think Bullock's probably a late first or early second. And I think Fisher, just based on potential, probably goes about where he went in the first go-round. I don't think he's a third rounder all of a sudden. He started a bunch of games, did some good, did some bad. Those are three really good picks. And Kalen Bullock definitely doesn't make it to the third round in a redraft.
Dude, he wrote a damn novella on Kalen Bullock here. This is because there were some serious Kalen Bullock haters on here.
Yeah.
This might be evidence of being in the right environment, because USC, not necessarily known for its bone-rattling football as of late.
Lincoln Riley, not swarmy.
yeah. So that's where multiple different scouts said, here's another one, he's not a physical guy, he will turn it down. There's a lot of reasons why that USC defense was so bad. A 190-pound safety that's 6'3 has got to be one of the reasons. And
that
I don't,
sucks
again,
for him,
I think,
man.
Yeah, he needs to improve on his tackling, but I didn't see a lack of willingness of physicality. Let me know on the text line if maybe I've got a blind spot for him, because I didn't see a lack of willingness to make plays as one of the issues.
That is a lazy narrative right there, that you're taking the fact that he played on a defense that was overall bad, and you're basically like, well, he played on that defense, he must not be very good.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that scout, if I knew who that scout was, I'd call him into my office right now, and I'd rip his scout badge off of his lapel. I'd say, give that back to me.
All right, for those of you who haven't played the game, for those of you who haven't played the game, you wouldn't know which quarterbacks we've done already, and obviously the Texans have drafted a few quarterbacks, but going back 10-plus years, this will be an easy one for you, Sean.
Okay.
But let's play devil's advocate.
I'll let it marinate for the audience, no worries.
He's got high-level NFL accuracy and NFL vision. I think he understands the game so well and gets it out under 3 seconds. He has a very high football IQ.
Okay.
So given what you know, I think you're going to get this.
Given what I know, given who we've touched upon in this process, that's obviously Tom Savage. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
That's got to be CJ right there.
That's
right?
CJ, yeah. Most of the negatives were all about the S2 cognition test.
Mm.
There were people saying that's a no-go, that you just can't do it. There were some really nasty that I don't even like revisiting all the S2 nonsense.
Right.
All these dudes who had just found out what the S2 cognition test even was were naming it as an absolute no-go. That it's a barrier to ever making it in the NFL.
CJ Stroud off their board like he robbed a liquor store the day of the draft.
Right. So to read some non-anonymous quotes, Ryan Day expressed his shock that Stroud's cognitive abilities were being questioned. This is Ryan Day. And look, yeah, a college coach is going to stick up for his player,
sure.
But I think it's notable the way Ryan Day said it. I just feel like this is one that I've always felt was what makes him special. For this to be something that's a topic of conversation right now is catching me off guard.
Yeah.
And I think that if you think about all the various Ohio State quarterbacks that he's had, that CJ was the one that they're going to be like, oh, I don't know if he's got a good football IQ
or
anything.
Yeah.
Like CJ was the most advanced out of any of the more notable guys. The other thing about the S2 cognition test was people kept framing it like it was an IQ test of some sort.
Yeah.
When it's way more about your the way you visually process things.
Reacting.
And all of those. And even the S2 cognition test guy at the time was saying, well, no, some of these tests we're not sure because of the circumstances we gave the tests out, they weren't valid. And it took a full year for people to kind of go back and look at that and say, oh yeah, he did say that at the time, didn't he?
Okay,
yeah.
We are into our second draft cycle since CJ Stroud was drafted, right? Last year, 2024, now this year, 2025. Have you seen anything anywhere about the S2 test since CJ's rookie year? I have
not.
No,
it's been... No, you know the funniest thing in going back and revisiting the S2 cognition test? What were you doing? We were calling it S2 cognidiocy.
I don't remember. I like that, though.
Yeah. The craziest thing about it was the people that had these conspiracy theories that the Texans put that info out there because they wanted CJ to drop in the draft, which was hilarious because the Carolina Panthers were one of the teams that actually subscribe to the S2 cognition results.
Yeah.
The Texans are not. That somehow it was the Texans were going to put this information out there so one of the teams that actually subscribes to the S2 cognition test would learn about it, and then that CJ Stroud would fall to the Texans.
At all right, two.
That's brilliant conspiracy theory there. Yeah.
The Texans are acting like a team that's picking at 10 when they're picking at 2. Yeah, it's just a lot of dumb people out there, man.
I don't think we did this one. Yeah. This is the one big one. I don't think we did this one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I'm wrong. This is a wide receiver drafted by the Texans.
Okay.
He's gone through a tremendous maturation process. The product he is right now, he's a pro. His commitment level is really strong. He'll do all the necessary things to maximize who he is. He's more like a third-round pick, but he can end up being a good number two receiver.
Oh, boy.
Let me give you one more.
Okay.
His Senior Bowl was average, but he looked pretty damn good at Pro Day. He has natural hands.
Is it... Man. Okay, I want to say Nico. Is it Nico?
It's Nico.
Okay.
Good job.
Thank you.
I probably shouldn't have said it was a big one. That was,
no, that's okay. It's all right.
The fact that somebody was saying that he's probably a third rounder, but he could be a solid number two,
that's
a little bit of an underestimation, obviously.
But I think that was the narrative around him even 2 years into the league. You know, he didn't become a number one until he became a number one, you know?
The negative that I couldn't give you, because it involves a name, is he comes out and runs a 4.4, yet when he played, they passed the ball to number eight, Ronnie Bell, all the time. Bell looked like the best one by far. And they ran Collins on just
I got to look up where... What's his name? Ronnie Bell?
Up the field routes. If he's that good, why didn't the coaches try to get the ball to him?
Okay, Ronnie Bell. Ronnie Bell is an American professional football wide receiver for the Detroit Lions of the National Football League.
I think he started off with San Francisco, if I remember correctly.
Did he? Okay, right? Yeah, let's see here. Yeah, good call. He was drafted in the 7th round by the 49ers.
Yeah, I think the thing with Nico was that he sat out the COVID year.
Yes.
I mean, that was the big thing. Yep. So where that was a little bit of a stretch for Nick going out on a limb, kind of projecting some of those COVID guys.
Yeah.
I think Davis Mills kind of maybe fell into that where, all right, look, he hasn't played as much football as we'd like him to have played. Because remember, Stanford played even fewer games than the other teams did. So it worked out, obviously, with Nico Collins.
All right, Cam Smith, I want to circle back to Cam Smith. We're going to talk to Heidi Watney at the top of the hour. Cam Smith's first big day, his interview with Julia Morales after the game was excellent. How big a story was Cam Smith on opening day for the Astros for you? We'll hit that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Astros win yesterday, 3-1 the final score. The good for Amber Valdez, 7 shutout innings. Cam Smith gets his first major league hit. That looked good. No catastrophes in the outfield, I would say. That was pretty good. If there's negatives, no real fireworks offensively, but they won the game, so who cares?
No catastrophes in the outfield. We had a near collision with Jose Altuve and Jake Myers, where Jake Myers was trying to call Altuve off. Altuve just ran like he was running whatever the equivalent of dancing like no one's watching. He was running like there was no one else in the outfield.
There's no one yelling at him.
with his arm stretched straight above him, no slowing down, grabbed the ball away from Jake Myers. Could have been a collision under other circumstances. That play felt like when I did one of those monitors that your insurance company will send you, to monitor your driving habits.
Oh yeah.
To see whether, and I ended up getting some money knocked off of my insurance. It was nice.
You.
Yeah. But, you know, that monitor, it beeps when you do something that's a little erratic or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When it beeps, that's kind of that monitor saying like, "Hey, that's the kind of behavior that will lead to a collision in left field."
Yeah.
if you don't monitor it a little bit.
They're, you're saying Altuve, we may need one of those out there for him.
He needs a little beeper.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, okay, this is unsafe driving.
Yes,
okay?
Yeah. I just
the worst thing about that little monitor is that there. I did learn some valuable lessons, because if you accelerate too quickly, mm-hmm. it'll beep. And I'm like, well, I had to accelerate quickly because I pulled out in front of that car.
Yeah.
What, do you want me to get hit? And then I realized, oh, I didn't have to pull out in front of that car.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it was,
okay.
It was my adverse behavior causing the adverse behavior.
Yeah. It was like,
caused the beep.
Okay.
Oh,
all right. Yeah.
This is like Inception. Yeah. Cam Smith, good news out of that game. I would say the only other thing from that game that makes me nervous that I feel like would carry forward would be if, you know, we're in a one-run game tonight against the Mets and you got to bring in Brian Abreu and or Josh Hader. Although, man, that's Josh Hader threw enough pitches to where I'm like, okay, do they use him tonight in a safe situation?
It was the most pitches he's ever thrown with the Astros. I couldn't hear if he said with the Astros or in his entire major league career.
Yeah.
I believe it was the most since he's been with the Astros, his most pitches in one outing.
It was,
at the very least.
It was a lot. I forget which hitter it was on the Mets. I'm sure the text page will tell me. But, man, he went 0-2 on everybody. He went 0-2 on everybody, and he let them work back into the count. He walked the guy. He gave up a hit. The one guy he walked, and, God, it escapes me who it was, but he must have fouled off six pitches. Amy and I are watching this. I'm like, man, this guy alone is going to get Hader taken out of this game, because he threw like 10 or 11 pitches to one guy. Here was Cam Smith after the game with Julie Morales. Fun exchange after his Major League debut.
Cam here. What a day. What a few days, a week. I don't know. We could go back to before spring training, I'm sure, with you. But just take me through the process that you had to go through as you walked up to the plate for the very first time. And what did you tell yourself?
Yeah, I mean, an incredible feeling. They weren't playing about, you can feel the fourth deck. I asked Joe a couple of days ago. I said, are they going to fill those seats up all the way up there to where I can barely see? He said, you'll see. Yeah, so I felt that energy, and it just, like, it feels so good to be home.
Getting that first hit, too, what did that do for you?
I think it settled me down a little bit, but at the same time, like, you know, I want to keep going. I want to keep helping these guys win. So I'm just glad we got the win today. It was a great game.
I do want to know also how it felt or what it made you feel when you ran out to right field and you got that standing ovation and the crowd was going nuts for you.
Yeah, I think that was the best feeling I had so far. Beyond the hit, I think going out there for defense, like waving to the fans, that was the best feeling.
You talked about the fourth deck. You talked about what you're going to feel in this ballpark. But, I mean, I know college baseball is great, but what are your takeaways from playing at Daikin Park for the first time like this?
Compared to college, it's like triple what Florida State has. You know, they bring out a good crowd at Florida State, but this is no joke. I mean, this is the show, so I'm glad to call this place home now.
Are you excited to hug the 30-plus people that were here for you today?
Yeah, they're all here today, and I heard them, too, so I'll see them soon.
All right, so there you go. And even at the end there, this is what I noticed at the end when she said, thanks, Cam. He said, thanks, Julia. I'm like, good job. 22-year-old addressing people by their name. Like, you get to know new people in the building, man.
Yeah, that was good. He's had the advantage of spring training and whatnot.
Yep.
Florida State's record baseball crowd was 6,789 in 2008.
One-seventh of what he's playing in front of yesterday.
Much different experience. By the way, when I looked that up yesterday, I realized I gave myself a little bit of a pass for saying. I remember I was talking about Cam Ward, and I had said Florida State instead of Miami for some reason. It's the Cam Smith dynamic. I haven't messed up their names yet.
Yeah,
but I did
you've
mess
done
up
good
the alma
with all
maters,
these Cams
obviously.
In our lives. You've had a good week.
But that was a big one.
Yeah.
That was a big one. I was beating myself up pretty bad about the Miami versus Florida State. I think Cam acknowledging that he was nervous before the game to the point where he had to force himself to eat for the first time ever before a baseball game.
Yeah.
A, He said that he knew that the butterflies were good because that meant he was ready. That's good. That's it. He's listened to somebody teach him that lesson somewhere along the way. But then also knowing that he did have to eat before the game. He didn't let the nervousness overcome him or anything.
No.
And that it was easier to eat also because he had gone to Shipley and got a 3 dozen donuts for the guys.
That's right.
Him.
That's right.
Yeah.
The thing, and by the way, thank you for the texters. It was Luis Angel, Acuna. Ronald Acuna's.
There's 12 brother. Pitches in that.
Was it 12 pitches? It felt like 20. It was incredible. The thing that I loved hearing in that conversation with Julia was how welcoming the Astros fans have been. Him calling it home a couple times, which circles back to the conversation you and I had with his mom outside the stadium that one day that we met her, where you know this is her son. She thought he was going to be a Cub. They've gotten used to him being in the Cubs organization until the day he was traded for Kyle Tucker. His grandma's a Cubs fan. That's a great point, too.
Yeah.
And she was, the day you and I conversed with her, she was clearly concerned about the reception that she felt like Cam Smith was getting based on social media. She was nervous that people were angry with Cam Smith about the Kyle Tucker trade, when in fact what she was probably feeling was more the love that Astro fans on Twitter have for Kyle Tucker than any negative feelings about Cam Smith. But you can tell from that interview there, you can tell from the way he's been performing for this team, and most importantly from her perspective, you can tell from the handful of interviews that she's done since you and I met her that one day, that she has felt that welcoming feeling here in Houston that you and I assured her existed here at the time. We promised her. Thank you, Houston, for not making Seth and I look like we're welching on a promise. We promised her that they would that she and Cam and everybody else part of that's part of that family would be warmly received in Houston, and it has happened that way. Standing ovation yesterday.
Can you imagine if they had booed him when he came out there?
Dude.
I'm trying to think of a fan base that might do that.
Philly would do it as a hazing process.
Yeah.
Philly wouldn't even feel that way about him, but they're like, no, we got to boo the guy. Like that's how you.
Yeah,
get
we got to boo
like
the
getting
guy,
a tattoo.
Right?
Yeah,
like, you don't want him to get easy. You don't want him to have it easy. Yeah, it's like a father that intentionally makes it really tough on his kids.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Text message. Okay, 5 years after all the buzzer BS, and you guys want to hit Altuve with a beeper in the outfield. Okay, this is a funnier one, though. Guys, I'm imagining Jake Myers calling off Altuve for a fly ball, and Altuve going,
when was that again?
Tuve, Hosey, my ball.
When was that again?
Snags the catch right in front of him. Oh, that's funny.
I think, look, yesterday I was, there were a couple circumstances. One is, okay, if there'd been a collision with Jake Myers, obviously, and they somebody gotten on base or scored because of it, there's probably going to be a situation like that at some point in the upcoming weeks. Cam Smith, it wasn't like he made an error in right field. It would have been a nice catch if he had caught it, but he didn't, and it ended up being a double. Ultimately didn't hurt the team in that inning. The Cubs didn't score.
Yep.
But there's going to be moments, and I think the biggest thing is, can they offset it offensively? And as long as there's no doubt in my mind that both Cam Smith and Jose Altuve will be better outfielders a month from now than they are right now.
Yes.
So there will be some hiccups along the way, but just in getting the everyday action and getting it natural and comfortable, it's going to get better as the season progresses. What they can't do as a team is start off so horrifically the way they did last year early in the season.
Yeah.
Because then it's going to really suck. And I don't, like, that was so weird last year.
Yep.
It was just such an outlier in so many ways, given the guys that weren't performing. It's one thing when there's injuries happen and some of your minor leagues don't perform well, but it was across the board on the pitching staff and with the hitting. Guys were just having their career worst performances. I don't expect that.
They were 0-4. They got swept by the Yankees to open the season, and their first win was a Ronel Blanco no-hitter against Toronto. It was the strangest start to a season that I can ever remember. For a team that ended up winning the division, it's the strangest start that I can ever remember for a team that I've followed. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Top of the hour, Heidi Watney of Apple TV is going to join us. She's the sideline reporter for tonight's game. The game is on Apple TV tonight, for those who don't know. 7 o'clock start. She will be on sidelines. We'll get her thoughts on the Astros and get some insight as to what Apple TV's got in store for this coming season. They got their Friday package going again, Friday doubleheaders. Astros are part of a couple of them, including tonight. Up next, how popular is Nick Caserio with Texan fans compared to other GMs during free agency? You know what
this one's going to make you livid,
yes,
avid listeners. Well, those of you who are regular listeners, you're going to be livid about not the Nick Caserio dynamic, but another dynamic of this poll.
Yes, at the top of the poll, it will make you livid, and we're going to stoke those embers. We'll do that coming up next.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Mokarum Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
Hey, I am kind of addicted to these little studies that shape opinions and narratives that come from data on social media. I'm a sucker for it. You know, I like this stuff. Even we get them sent to us a lot of times by people representing betting outlets and things like that. And this one pulled me in yesterday, and they know exactly who to put in the subject header based on geography. Hey, Sean, I forget who sent it to me, but the study is from BetwayInsider.com.
Yeah.
And they said, Nick Caserio is the ninth most popular GM amongst his own fans, positive sentiment based on free agency so far. I said, all right, I'll bite. I'll click on this. I'll take a look. And so I've got the rankings in front of me here.
They used online mentions of each NFL general manager in their team's home location.
Yeah.
So they geolocated where these tweets or posts were coming from and assessed the sentiment in those areas of these GMs.
Since March 10th. So that's the beginning of free agency. Yeah, they call it a social listening tool.
Okay.
Okay.
Whatever. I don't like that.
Yeah, I know.
Big brother.
Yeah.
That's so many big brothers now.
Yeah.
There used to be one big brother we feared, the government. And now there's big brothers everywhere.
All over the place.
We call it, more likely to call him Karen these days.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Nick Caserio is the ninth most popular GM, according to the geo-fenced tweets and social media posts in the city of Houston. Now, here's the interesting thing. The positive sentiment of the posts, you figure somebody who's ninth is getting, 60, 70% positive sentiment, something like that. He's in the top third of GMs. 47% positive.
Yeah. Come to find out, people are actually pretty negative
about
on social
free agency.
Media. Well, that was a shock to me.
Well, and here's the thing, Seth. We know that unless you're one of the heavy hitter, big swinging teams the first day.
Yeah.
Generally, your fan base is going to get very impatient that first day.
Yeah.
There's
only five that were in the top five were the only ones that had greater than 50% approval.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so Nick Caserio is ninth. I'm curious if you want to text in Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, 713-572-4610. Are you feeling largely positive sentiment about Nick Caserio's free agency? I am a little surprised he's up that high just based on the kind of, other than the Tunsil trade, well, I guess the C.J. Gardner-Johnson trade. If you're including the trades, if you're just, because it's probably hard for that listening tool to discern which is which.
Well, yeah, they're not. They're just using the mentions of him during this period of time.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, a lot of it comes down to, okay, how big were the moves and how much were people talking about him?
Yeah.
The Kenyon Green for C.J. Gardner-Johnson got a lot of pop and buzz.
Yes.
Because it felt like you were getting something for nothing.
Yes.
Given the way that we've watched Kenyon Green over these last few years. So I think that probably gave him a huge bump. But then the Laremy Tunsil trade, even though, boy, there are a lot of people that, even if they were really cool with the Tunsil trade, still were waiting for a corresponding move on the offensive line.
Yeah.
So I think contrary to what people would think outside of Houston, because people outside of Houston were saying things like, what the hell is Caserio doing?
Yeah.
Inside of Houston, I think most Texans fans were for the trade, but they expected something to happen in the ensuing days, and there were no fireworks on the offensive line in the ensuing days.
No, 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 but I do think the totality of what you're talking about, Seth, is a net positive for Nick. Because I think when there's nothing going on, people are more inclined just to sit back as opposed to comment on it. Whereas the Tunsil trade, everybody had opinions on it. And we did the poll. We did that simple poll. Yes or no, are you in favor of the Laremy Tunsil trade after it was made? And it was like over 80% of the people were in favor of it. So I think that trade probably helped him. Here are the top five GMs, according to this method of measurement, in terms of positive sentiment in their geographic areas. Number five, Eric DaCosta, Baltimore Ravens. I feel like he's 60% positive sentiment. I feel like at any given time, that's where Eric DaCosta is among Raven fans.
I think that's where it's like the Ravens as an organization themselves. People are kind of like, yeah, we're just doing the Ravens things, and we're going to go, oh, we got salary cap constraints. Yep, we'll deal with it.
July 14th, what's the positive sentiment? Eric DaCosta, top five. Number four, he's loving this. Ryan Poles, Chicago Bears, 70%. 70% positive sentiment, man. That fan base is just into him.
They were one of the teams that did exactly what the Texans fans would have hoped that Casario was going to do. Is, man, they bolstered that offensive line in a big way in free agency. They very aggressively very aggressively addressed a hot button topic. So Ryan Poles, who continues to get credit heaped and heaped and heaped on him despite not winning any football games.
Right.
Good for him.
Right.
Yes, he's winning the PR game.
Number three, George Payton, Denver Broncos, 75%. I haven't looked close enough to the Broncos offseason to know why he's up that high.
Well, the Geno Smith one was going to be huge. But
Geno Smith didn't go to the Broncos. I'm just trying to think what moves the Broncos made that would have them up that high. I don't know. I'm not sure. Now, this number two on the list, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah from Minnesota, they were very similar to the Chicago Bears. They made big moves on the offensive line. They signed Will Fries. They signed Ryan Kelly. 88% positive. And I feel like that's probably Minnesota, too. Don't Minnesota people just seem like, hey there, hey, we love our Vikings. Way to go there, Adofo-Mensah.
I think the Vikings, though, because a lot of it revolved around, okay, how are you going to help J.J. McCarthy?
Mm-hmm.
So really aggressively addressing the offensive and defensive line, the offensive line in that regard.
Yeah.
And then they got, you think with the Vikings, back in the day when they had those two stud defensive tackles, I'm blanking the guys that got caught up in the Star Caps scenario. They did the same thing. They went out and got a couple of premier defensive tackles.
Yes.
So I think just the perception of, hey, we're building this from the ground up, the fundamental upfront positions, and we're going to help out this young quarterback. Probably they felt good about that offseason.
Yeah, Jonathan Allen, and I'm trying to remember who the other D tackle they signed this offseason was.
Didn't they sign? No. The Patriots signed him. Yeah.
Whatever.
Anyway.
Yeah, you were thinking of Milton Williams. Yeah, he went to the Patriots. But anyways, 88% for the Minnesota Vikings. Number one on the list, and just kill me now. Positive sentiment. You Jacksonville people are so gullible, man. You are just, you and your owner just snowed under big words from the magnificent Gladstone. 96% positive sentiment for this guy.
I think that, I have a fresh perspective, I'd say. A deep understanding of really the modern tools and mechanisms that are revolutionizing the sport. And so, that'll certainly be something that we leverage here. While at the same time, I mean, we're walking into the combine this afternoon, right? And so the current mode of operation is in rhythm. The cadence is in place. So my intent here through this initial spring is to really calibrate my own mode of operation to the current mode of operation, insert some specific efficiencies that'll help me better understand our group's insights and perspectives, and then assess at the end of this spring what types of things we can roll out into the future.
Much.
But we'll certainly put the pedal to the metal on a lot of advanced sort of modes of operation.
I've just lost complete respect
they
for the
love
city
it.
Of Jacksonville.
They love it,
they
man.
Love it. They're
they
spoon-fed. Yeah.
They love it. He threw out some big corporate buzzwords, and they feel like they've got a plan.
Took
this
it
is what
to
I always
limit.
Try to do. What was that one I missed?
Took it to the limit.
Oh, yeah.
That's your audience.
That might be part of it. People in Jacksonville are like, we got this reputation as these slack-jawed idiots, like we're some characters on The Simpsons or something, but now we got a real good talk. That guy talks real good.
Smooth talking
guy. What are you going to say about us now?
Yep. You got a guy that uses his words real good. All right. People were weighing in on this. Yes, Nick seems like the type of GM that really tries to construct a roster, like someone who doesn't want to absolutely tear it down because of day one free agents. I approve of Nick.
No, and I think that with the Texans too, it's again, he was the ninth highest rated in this one. It's just that nobody, only five guys had greater than 50% approval ratings.
That's the big takeaway, is people are not happy ever during free agency by and large.
The by far the worst was Terry Fontenot from the Falcons.
Yeah.
I feel like as long as they still have Kirk Cousins and a first round draft pick at quarterback in the building, and Kirk and Cousins is making as much money as he is, that's probably going to be the thing. Brian Gutekunst from the Packers was the second lowest.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe Aaron Rodgers' propaganda campaign is working finally against Brian Gutekunst.
I don't know how popular he's been in Green Bay really ever since all the drama started with it. The Jordan Love, I feel like Packers fans are positive about Jordan Love, but I'm guessing feel like, okay, but if this is going to be the same old team that doesn't aggressively pursue free agency and everything else, are we just going to end up in that same Aaron Rodgers situation at some point?
All right, Heidi Watney, Apple TV. They've got the game tonight between the Mets and the Astros. She is on sidelines. We will talk to her, get her thoughts on the Astros, the upcoming season, find out what Apple's got going on for their broadcast this year. We'll do all of that coming up next.